Welcome back, everyone. My name is Seamus Strapp, your host of the Orthopraxy Podcast, brought to you by Finish Line Ministries International. This show exists to talk about the Christian life and living out what we believe. And on this week's episode, I sit down with my guest, Paul Vanderclay. Paul is the pastor of Living Stones Christian Reformed Church out in Sacramento, California. As well as that, he has got a really great YouTube channel, a channel that I've talked about on several occasions on this show, either to guests or kind of the solo episodes. I've talked about some of his stuff. If you haven't checked it out yet, I highly encourage you to do so. We talk a lot about what he's kind of doing with his channel, what he's accomplishing, and really what we talk about is how the goal for him and for kind of the community that he's working with is to have conversations. Conversations about faith, but conversations about life and ideologies and what's on our brain and kind of working through what's buggering us. So I love it. If you know anything about me, you know I love conversations. I'll sit down for hours and hours and talk. So I'm all in. I'll leave some descriptions below about kind of his YouTube channel and estuaries. But in addition to that, we kind of talk about the internet and how it's affecting our conversations and kind of going towards people and hearing what they have to say. We also talk about the church and what it's doing in the world and how love should be our goal to the world, our witness to the world. I know you're going to love this conversation. I had a really good conversation. There's a handful of times Paul is a pastor of an inner city church. And so he had some people knock on his door that needed his attention. So if you see some cuts, he was doing that. You'll enjoy the conversation nonetheless. I had a really great time. I know you will as well. I'll see you in a minute. Well, this is the Orthopraxy Podcast. My guest today is Pastor Paul Vanderclay. Paul, you're a pastor out in Sacramento. You have a YouTube channel. I don't want to kind of steal your story. So by way of introduction for people, who are you? What do you do? What are you about?
I'm a third generation minister in the Christian Reformed Church of North America. My grandfather pastored churches in the prairies and on the East Coast, usually rural churches. My father pastored an inner city church in Paterson, New Jersey, just outside of New York. That's where I grew up. I went to Calvin College and eventually Calvin Seminary. I was an overseas missionary for the first 7 years of my pastorate. And then I took a call to this church in Sacramento, which would probably, in some terms, California inner city doesn't quite work. California cities are very much ring-like. They sort of grow out. But it's a distressed community church, a lot of African-Americans, very diverse ethnically, a lot of homeless, mental illness, substance abuse in the community. So that kind of thing. About 5-6 years ago, I've always been, being a pastor of a small church, you do small church stuff, but I've also been interested in intellectual things. And so you read books and listen to stuff. About 2006, I went for a deep dive into a lot of Tim Keller stuff that kind of lasted until 2011. And then in 2017, I came across Jordan Peterson and found that to be quite interesting and sort of starting to do a deep dive into that. I played around with YouTube a little bit because people sometimes, you know, invited me to write books, but I recognize that most of the people that I work with don't read books. Yeah. So I thought playing around with YouTube and eventually audio podcast too, because there's an audio podcast on my channel as well. I do that. And I have a little thing with a member of my church called the Freddie and Paul Show that he wanted to do. And then I decided to make a commentary video on Jordan Peterson's biblical series. And that opened up in a way that I didn't understand YouTube at all, how it worked, what it was. I just thought it was a place that you just put a video up if you wanted to share it with people. Yeah. And I didn't understand the power of the algorithm in terms of sending people to me, what that would mean. And so for the last 5 years, I've been on that journey, which has been interesting. One of the things that I always enjoyed was having what I would think would be pastorally. Can you pause it a second? I got someone at my door. I don't have anybody else here at the church. There we go. So, let's see. Where was I? Jordan work. Peterson. Oh, estuary. So one of the things that I always churches tend to be able to reach out sort of in some predictable ways. But I when I first got to Sacramento, worked with a lot of church planters, and I was a little bit envious of the focus that they could have on having good conversations with people outside the church. And I always wanted a mechanism to do that. And as a result of the YouTube channel, I started what then was a Jordan Peterson meetup. And then I could get, dozens of people coming to church for interesting conversation. And then when Jordan sort of went on his hiatus in 2019, what's that?
I said you lost some content then when he was on pause.
Right. And so then a friend of mine and I developed what I call Estuary, which is basically a conversational method to people come to church looking for $20 for gas or for food or for help with the utility bill. And I thought, why don't people come to church looking for good conversation partners to talk about what's most important to them? People come to church for Bible studies and the church is able to do that. But I wanted to have conversations with people about what they wanted to talk about, what they thought was important. And I thought that would be important in terms of both pastoral care and evangelism. And so then we started this Estuary project. And so that's been another facet of my ministry, is helping these groups start in churches all over the world. So
interesting. It's
doing much stuff like that.
How does that work? What does that look like structure wise?
Well, basically, a friend of mine, John Van Donk in Southern California, he saw what was happening around my channel and he really encouraged me to do the meetup thing. But then we realized that, people can only talk about Jordan Peterson for so long and you kind of hit bottom.
Yeah.
And we needed a process by which a group of 6, 8, 10 people in a circle, and if you have more people come, you can split them into smaller groups. And churches are used to doing this kind of thing. 6, 8, 10 people could basically, by going around the room and talking about what's on their mind, what they've been thinking about, and then having the group decide what topics to begin with, that you could have a good group experience of talking about things that were of interest to the group that wouldn't sort of devolve into, let's say, if there's one person that's talking all the time or one person's particularly forceful, you could kind of allow, not have sort of those conversation killers destroy. Because, in a Bible study, well, we're here to talk about John 3, bang. Or we're studying this book and we're going to talk about chapter 7. But what do you do when you have people coming in off the street that don't have sort of a common focus? And again, church provides that. And we do Bible studies and we do book groups. We do all those kind of things at church. But people walking off the street, they don't know the Bible and they don't necessarily even care about what the Bible says. They're not interested in talking about that. But they do have needs and questions and wants and interests. And so these groups basically allow the group to pursue those interests. And for me as a pastor, I want to be in on those conversations.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're facilitating.
Yeah. So are those normally like, being where you at, is that all lower income people? Is that a mixture of like?
Very eclectic. Pause the recording again. The guy's right out my door. Usually doesn't happen. I'm usually by myself all the time. So
no, as a pastor, so kind of what you're going for or what you're talking about is, I don't want to get distracted by my own question. Okay. It's usually an eclectic group of people is what you're saying about some of these groups.
About these estuary groups.
Yes. Yes.
Sunday tends to be Christians that come in. Estuary groups, like for example, say my group is a little different because I have this channel. Yeah. So I have people who come to me because they watch the channel. So I'll tend to get a few more people, and also people who are sort of, until they sort of get into the estuary rhythm, they're sort of attracted by my channel, but then they begin to understand what the Estuary Group does. My friend in Southern California who doesn't have a channel, you know, so for example, he has in his group, most of whom don't go to church. He's got a black university professor who teaches English that is really frustrated with the woke stuff. He's got a very woke Irish, Jewish, Brazilian immigrant comes in and talks. He's got another guy who's from Saudi Arabia, but spent years in India and is a medical doctor and wants to have interesting conversations. So you tend to get people who are open-minded, have a desire to explore ideas, a desire to share those ideas and have some pushback from their ideas, and want a place to that is sort of open enough to be able to afford it. And so universities tended to have that space in the past, but part of what's been happening in the broader culture is that there are these secular orthodoxies that are sort of hemming in people. And so actually the church is a place where, at least with Estuary, it's more difficult with a Bible study, but with Estuary, where you can express the ideas that you have. And part of this grew out of me being a pastor, because one of the things that you figure out when you're a pastor is that churches, quite rightly, in a sense, are containers for ideas and beliefs. Mm-hmm. And so if you are in a church that has its own doctrinal set of beliefs, if you express doubts or questions that tend to go against the prevailing ideas of the church, you will lose status in that church. And if you're a member of that church, what tends to happen then is people sort of have these ideas. Maybe they'll talk to the pastor about it quietly, but they don't actually have a place to process these ideas.
So
Estuary in that sense can be both a place — I talk about Estuary being church adjacent. It's both a place where people outside the church can sort of play with ideas, and people inside the church can sort of take a step out of the church and talk about what they're thinking and feeling. And again, as a pastor, many pastors have the experience of someone, boom, they've left church. And it's like, where'd they go?
Yeah.
And then you visit them and you begin to talk to them, and you realize this thing has been festering in them for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And the pastor wants to say, well, why didn't you tell me about this? I would have loved to have talked this. Well, you know, pastor, I didn't want to bother you. And the truth is they would have felt tension within the church. And so it's easier for them to just completely leave the church instead of actually dealing with the issue. Sure. So Estuary is supposed to help with a bunch of those dynamics.
Yeah. Just even you explaining that, there'd be so much anxiety about something like that, right? Like, churches hearing this idea would find that just so scary, in the fact that you're going to invite people who don't believe in our theology to come in and have ideologies that they want to spread. And then in addition to, like, you're asking Christians to kind of go into a space where they're not having the guardrails of catechism and the guardrails of, you know, your confessions there, right? Like, that just seems dangerous. Some people would say that was dangerous, but I think one of the things that I kind of enjoy about your channel, and you describe yourself as this, like, you as an individual are an individual of high openness. Like, you're just willing to have the conversation, have the, you know, hear the thought, right? Whatever it might be. But a large group of Christianity finds that just innately threatening. Why shouldn't it be? Why should we be more willing to go to an Estuary? Because there's conversations — and not to go down any of these rabbit trails, but like woke ideology and transgender ideology and MAGA and, you know, secularism. I mean, there's so many competing ideologies. And if you're stuck in the middle as someone like me, you're just like, well, I just want to kind of hear the details. But you're kind of skirted away from that. So, okay, the question is, why shouldn't we be afraid as Christians to kind of think in rooms like that?
I don't think there's anything wrong with hothouse tomatoes. but they're always dependent on their greenhouses. And when I read the New Testament, when I look at the ministry of the Apostle Paul, he went into, you know, where didn't he go? In many ways, the Apostle Paul's ministry usually began in the marketplace. Maybe Paul was, you know, he was a tent maker, and that, because the tents, they didn't have canvas or vinyl. They had leather. They had animal skin. So he was a leather worker, basically. And he would go into the marketplace, and he would work his craft. And in the marketplace, in the agora, he would discuss the ideas that were there. And of course, there's the famous scene in Athens where he does this. But, you know, this is what this is how Christianity has grown, and this is where Christianity should grow. And if Christians feel so fragile in their opinions, well, they're in real trouble. And I think I would hope that at least I think Christians need to be out in the public square learning, not just out there sort of broadcasting their ideas, mm-hmm. but figuring out how to engage the culture with their ideas. Mm. And where are you going to do that? How are you going to become good at this? Again, a lot of this came to me watching. So church planters, so you're going to plant a church out of nothing. Well, there's different ways you can do it. Maybe you can grab a whole group of disaffected Christians and bring them into your place. Well, good luck with that, because if they are disaffected in the other church, it's probably a personality trait more than just a circumstantial situation.
Yeah, for sure.
So what to do when you plant a church, and many people have done this, you need to have a conversation with a few hundred people, if not 1,000 people, ask them some questions. And that isn't just a matter of gaining ideas about what's going on in the culture. It's also a matter of sharpening up the church planter to be able to have effective evangelistic and not just evangelistic, but pastoral conversations with people. Because the truth is, again, as a local church pastor, I extend pastoral care far beyond just my group of local congregants, because people will come to me and they may never join my church, but they've got a question, they've got a concern, they've got a need. And I might be able to address that need or help that concern or help them out in some way. But if I haven't demonstrated that the church actually has something to offer, well, then there isn't going to be any reason why anybody's going to go to church at all, except maybe out of simply the flow of their tradition. And in fact, what we're seeing in our culture is that's not enough often to keep a lot of churches sustained.
Yeah. Yeah. So allowing people to have kind of this outlet is a exercise of faith. It's an exercise of mentality or of, you know, intellect. And so essentially you are a bit of an outlet for that. This, you have this estuary, but then overall your whole channel is kind of an outlet for Christians to do this.
Right.
I kind of have a view of what you do, but what do you think you're doing? That sounds so accusatory. I don't mean it like that. What do you see yourself doing? That's maybe a better way to say that, with your channel. What is it? Maybe it's accidental, but what do you see yourself doing?
I initially just wanted some new the channel started because I wanted some, I found what Jordan Peterson was doing with his biblical series very interesting, and I wanted to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And nobody in my church was watching that. Most of the people in my church are old. They don't watch YouTube at all.
Yeah.
If they're on anything, it's Facebook, and I don't particularly like Facebook.
Yeah.
So I wanted people to talk about this with, and I thought, you know, I'd make a few friends via YouTube, and that would be good. And what I found is I made a few thousand friends. Mm. What I discovered was that there was most Christian YouTube looks like there's first concern trolling. You know, here's an item of concern out in the culture, and here's the Christian answer. Yeah. And a lot of Christians watch that, and that's absolutely fine. There are a lot of things to be concerned about, and there are wonderful Christian answers, and many people on YouTube can adequately express a whole bunch of different Christian answers.
Yeah.
The way that I have seen, the way I see people work is that answers are fine things out there in the world, but many more people are engaged by and through relationships. And so helping to create relationship. Now, I can only have a relationship with a certain number of people because I'm a human being. I have 24 hours in a day. I've got to sleep. I've got to eat. I've got a church. I've got a family. I've got all those things. So I've got a certain amount of relational capacity. And pastors and churches are always dealing with this issue too. Because often someone comes into a church, they visit a church, they hear a sermon, or they like the worship service, or they shook hands with the pastor, and they needed a conversation with the pastor because they had a fight with their wife, or they're in trouble with some addiction, or their job isn't going well. And so they sit down with the pastor one or two times. The pastor makes them feel better. It's like, oh, good, I'm going to be a part of that church. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that they very quickly realize is that the pastor is doing a job, and it's not like you can walk into a church and suddenly be best friends with the pastor when he's got hundreds, if not thousands, of other people that he, in fact, has to relate to and do all of this stuff with. And yeah. So the job of the pastor is to knit together a community where the pastor's still around and the pastor has a specialized task within the church. But for the most part, a lot of the needs of the people have to be met by the community of the people.
Yeah.
So very quickly, when I discovered that my channel was attracting more people than I could individually and personally relate to, I knew I had to think about how can we have structures and relationships by which people can meet each other and begin to have primary relationships with each other, where I'll be the pastor and, you know, yeah, you can call the pastor if you're in the hospital or to do a funeral or if there's some specialized need that you have. But in terms of the normal everyday discipleship and pastoral care, that's going to be handled probably between interpersonal relationships and in small group settings. This is basic church methodology today.
Yeah.
And I saw that, well, how am I going to do this on the internet?
Yeah.
Well, some people from my local meetup started a Discord server, and that's still going. But I discovered that only a select group of people really can make use of a Discord server well. So once that's going, you know, we try to have other ways. One of the things that we do is we have, especially now after COVID, we have in-person gatherings. And so in May, I'm doing an event with John Vervaeke and Jonathan Peugeot in Southern California. In July, I'm doing an event in Washington, D.C. with Michael Martin and Spencer Klavan. Last summer, I did events in the U.K. and in Germany and in the Netherlands. And the goal there is to, just like with my estuary groups and my meetups, people will come because they watch the channel. But what I really want them to do is to go and meet other people and build relationships that will help further these people's development, hopefully their walk with Christ and into Christ. Now, as with almost all other church work, I help somebody out, let's say with money for gas or because they had a fight with their wife or because they're feeling depressed or something like that, that won't always yield to that person becoming a member of my church. Sometimes that person will become a member of another church. Sometimes that person won't be a member of any church at all because they're already participating in a different religious community. This stuff happens if you minister in a very cosmopolitan area.
Yeah.
And so as a pastor, you look at that and you say, all right, well, they're a better Jew. And you say, praise God, you know, you plant seeds, you leave that stuff to the Lord, but that's pastoral ministry. And so between estuary groups, Discord servers, YouTube conversations, other kinds of in-person meetings, hopefully we can help people make progress. And part of the reason that a lot of the events that I am doing, you know, like my event with Jonathan Peugeot and John Vervaeke, Jonathan Peugeot used to be evangelical, moved to orthodoxy. John Vervaeke grew up in a fundamentalist home and in many ways has sort of become post-Christian. He's exploring Neoplatonism now. So I wanted to have a community where people could look at it and say, I'm going to go to that conference. Vander Clay's a Christian. I get that. Yeah. I'm not afraid of him because he's a Christian. In fact, we have two different kinds of Christians here, and then we have a non-Christian here. But we're going to have conversations together.
Yeah.
Because what happens to the church often, it gets very insular.
Yeah.
And very quickly, Christians lose the capacity, at least within the church, when they're out there working, they can talk. But within the church loses the capacity to actually have productive conversations with the broader world beyond beyond the church.
Yeah. So speaking of this conference that you're talking about and kind of the not the genre, but the theme of the conference or the topic of the conference is finding a spiritual home. Is that right?
The quest for a spiritual home.
And it just made me think, like, you know, our church, my pastor is a big fan of Francis Schaeffer. And so Francis Schaeffer had LaBrie. LaBrie, for those who don't know, is this kind of spiritual community, but it's analog. It's in person, where people come from all sorts of faiths could come and you hear, you talk philosophy, you talk theology. And so that really reminded me. So now you're shaking your head. Like, is that intentional? Are you stealing from Francis? How did, you know, this is interesting. How did you get to creating this?
I didn't have Francis Schaeffer in mind when I started doing this, but very quickly after I started doing this, I began to have conversations with usually older people, because LaBrie was a little bit before my time, that said, I was in LaBrie. I went there.
Yeah.
And what I see you doing reminds me of LaBrie.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have a chalet with a big table where we're going to have meals.
Shoot.
And anybody who went to LaBrie, I mean, but LaBrie basically started in many ways with the same thing. Because, I mean, Schaeffer's story is a fascinating one. But there are a number of people who look at what's happening here and say, yeah, this is very LaBrie-like.
Yeah.
So I welcome that comparison.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, cause you're a Dutch Calvinist. You've talked about in the past, like, you know, Abraham Kuyper's kind of in your tradition, and Kuyper and Schaeffer are more that kind of presuppositional, apologetic, to where it's like, hey, we're going to talk about assumptions. We're going to talk about worldviews. We're going to get to the base of where, what your ambitions and what's going on in your heart, rather than, hey, DNA is shaped in such a way that it would be folded so specifically. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the modern evangelical world is so obsessed with, like you said, the answers. You said something last week on one of your videos, and I'm sure there's so many, you make a lot, so that's a blur. But you talked about how a lot of the Christian YouTube world is stuck in the 90s. And to me, I kind of interpreted that, and obviously you can correct me if I'm wrong, was like, we're focused on a lot of like our tinkering of theology, which is, you know, it's good, it's important, but like there's a broader cultural shift that's going on that we're missing the moment. Like, we're missing the conversations, we're missing the, and I think there are people who are trying to do that. I mean, you're a part of that, but I think a lot of Christian YouTube, and me, I'm a part of that, I guess. A lot of it is, hey, it's heretic chasing, or it's like kind of lambasting the bad man, but not necessarily not giving you the framework to say, hey, here's why they're wrong. Not just like, hey, they're wrong and they're bad, don't touch the bad man, but like, no, philosophically, theologically, ideologically, here's why their argument is just kaput, you know? And so, but we don't equip people that way. So it's interesting to see this, and that you're willing to stand up with a Verveke who's going to talk about Buddhism, and he's going to talk about, he's like this in genetics and kind of DNA and all that stuff, but you're not intimidated by that.
Sometimes I am.
Yeah. I mean, that guy is just wicked smart. And so it's like,
yeah, that's right.
You hear a conversation
and you have this, I mean, you don't open an estuary meeting thinking I'm going to have all of the answers.
Yeah.
What you do want to communicate is, I'm not afraid of your questions.
Hmm.
And I might not be able to satisfy your questions with what I have to give you, but what I do have to give you is myself, and hopefully within an estuary context, friendship and community. And I think, you know, by and large, Christianity did not win because it necessarily had all the best answers. I think Christianity wins when its people learn how to love best.
Yeah.
And by love, I don't just mean a quivering mass of availability, because love, you know, the full love is about being able to say yes and no. You know, every parent who loves well says yes and no. The parent that only says yes isn't loving. The parent that only says no isn't loving. Yeah. It's yes and no, when and where. And so I believe in Christian witness, but I think Christian witness is always relational. And finally, when what Christ affords us is this capacity, if we can love better than the rest of the world, the gospel and Christianity will win, because that's at the center of our calling.
Yes. Yes. I want to get back to that point towards the end. I don't want to, because I have a question for you about kind of in that vein, but I want to hold off to the end. You're creating this community, right? Of questioners, of seekers, people who feel like they want to be home. And, you know, Lewis and kind of Chesterton are such good. They kind of add to that language of like, here's the ultimate myth is in Christ. And you talk a lot about that. But that is, I think, distinctive. What you were trying to do is distinctive from what a lot of the internet community is. And here's what I mean by that. You talked about this week kind of swarms and beasts and people. I'll link a description so people can talk about that. But essentially, we have swarms of internet users who are flocking around ideas, and those ideas are bumping into other ideas and creating new ideas, yada, yada, yada. And the way that I've kind of thought about it was, each of us in our little worlds, whoever we follow, who we subscribe to, we're orbiting that massive object, that identity, that person, that media source. ESPN could be one, but also you could be one, and Jordan Peterson. And we're all kind of orbiting, and I'm a little satellite that orbits this, but then I also orbit that. And I, you know, I'm kind of free to orbit where I want to orbit. So what we do is, I kind of, in a lot of ways, as just a consumer, as a watcher, I relinquish myself over to your orbit. And I say, hey, just do for me what I can't do for myself, i.e. think critically. A lot of times we're not trained well to think critically, but also fight for me. There's cultural battles. So, you know, if you're a Tucker Carlson person, he'll fight for you, right? If you're a Rachel Maddow person, she'll fight for you. So you kind of get in their orbits. And so we each have that person that we kind of can adopt as an avatar. We can kind of go, all right, I am Candace Owens, for an example, or, you know, Destiny, or Milo Yiannopoulos, right? Whoever your guy is, and they can fight these battles for you. How do you see that in what you're doing? Because you're, in a way, you're a bit like that, right? Maybe to a lesser scale than Peterson. But I think what you're doing is maybe more, I don't know, kind of socially responsible, because a lot of those people, there's no touch with the orbit, right? There's no touch with the mass. Like, you're going to go have meetings. You're going to have a Discord. You're kind of creating healthy relationships in the analog that people get to have.
Yeah.
So my big question is, how is that affecting people overall, but then maybe as Christians, what do you see?
That's a good question. I hope well. It's, you know, there's a lot of question of scale here. What I've seen is that there are some people that started following my channel right away, and sort of hierarchies develop. They started their own YouTube channels. They have their own gatherings. And that's really, really very much what I want to see. Because, again, with this Dunbar number, I have room in my life for, let's say, 120 people. I have 25,000 subscribers to my YouTube channel. Now, that number doesn't mean what we tend to think it means. But it's obviously way too large than I can manage just at an interpersonal level. So then there are other channels with other specialities that are sort of sub-channels. And you might look at a hierarchy and say, well, I'm sort of a sub-channel of, let's say, Jordan Peterson, as is, say, Peugeot and Vervaeke.
Yeah.
So there is a hierarchy that scales. But what I've most wanted to communicate is a relational pattern that is secure, not fearful, Christian, not nihilistic, at least informed somewhat by tradition, but not traditionalism, and open to engagement from people to not only explore, but also develop around themselves. In other words, I would, the biggest flattery someone can give me is to do like I'm doing, you know, whether it means starting a YouTube channel or starting an estuary group, or, you know, some of the interesting things that have started is that there's an art group who began and they're working on art, and there was a writing Discord that started and they're working on their writing, and a bunch of people had their own little YouTube channels. They might not have a lot of followers or viewers, but they've got enough to keep the conversation interesting and productive.
Yeah.
And again, the goal here is not, I'm going to establish a big YouTube channel so I can get rich. The goal here is, how can we use this technology to build relationships between people that are helpful and productive in terms of, we can use secular language in terms of their own personal development, or we can use Christian language in terms of their walk into the form of Christ Jesus in this world today. And for me, that's sort of the metric of success. There are ways to grow YouTube channels large. And in some ways, my YouTube channel is both too small for certain things I want to do, but often too large for other things I want to achieve. And so figuring out how to do that as I go, that's a challenge. But again, my goal is as a pastor, you wind up doing funerals. David Brooks nicely talked about resume virtues and eulogy virtues. I think the church does well when it helps people really develop their eulogy virtues. Resume virtues are fine. We want people to succeed in their careers.
Yeah.
But these eulogy virtues, you know, even now in putting together the event for May, I was meeting with one of the OG people who found my channel early. And, are you coming in May? Well, I don't know, because such and such and such and such and such and such a person aren't coming. So therefore, I'm not going to come.
Yeah.
And I very quickly realized that the event should be about community more than listening to a speaker, because you can always hear all of us on YouTube.
Yeah.
What you really want when you come there is to make new relationships, spend time together. Right. There's a group of people who are camping instead of spending a night in the hotel. People that they've met online. And this isn't new to my channel, but to the degree that we can make it about something far larger than interest in Harry Potter or Star Wars or the Marvel Cinematic Universe, for me, and to me, I look at Harry Potter and all of these things, those are sort of downstream from church. Church has always been about knitting together a congregation, and hopefully pastors come and go, but the relationships between people are what really forms us.
Yeah. You know, that's the kind of the irony of the internet, is that it allows us to connect to people that are so uniquely like us, it's an oxymoron, but very much, you know, in our niche, but then separates us in so many other ways and fractionalize us in so many other ways. And so it'll be interesting to see in the future, how do we work through the muck of I have a group of community, but I'm nowhere near them, or I have a group of community, but I can never see them face to face. And like, what is that going to do for the mental health of us long term? And so it is a relief when you see a good friend, you know, from far away, right? Dietrich Bonhoeffer talks about how, like, for a Christian who's in a pagan land with no one around, like, the best thing in the world would be a Christian brother. And that would be like the best day of their year, is to be with somebody. And so, I mean, even if you're not a Christian, fellowship is still one of the greatest joys, right? And so it'll be interesting. It's great to hear that you're doing that. Because I think we're lacking that in so many ways. Our friends, people have way less friends today than they did 20, 30, 40 years ago. And I think we're going to die of loneliness.
Yeah. I was just listening to a podcast where it was an Irish counselor. And basically she was making the argument, people are running after therapists way too much. Mm. I forget exactly how she phrased it, but you know, people are sitting alone in their bedrooms with their computers and cell phones. That's how people are living their life. And in many ways, the internet and the cell phones and the social media can be really cool tools to make new friends. But if your friendship is always mediated through that social network,
yeah,
you're never going to get what you need from friendships, which have in fact sustained humanity for as long as we've had humanity.
Yeah. I always tell people at church that, like, I don't want to be your church friend and I don't want you to be my church friend, because if we're only friends on Sunday at church, then that's a terrible friendship. I want to be friends throughout the week. Like, I need people on Tuesday and Thursday night, and I need people throughout my life. And it's sad that even in the church, we can relegate friendship and to, you know, 9:30 on a Sunday. I talked about, like, what do you think your podcast does, or what do you think your channel does? I kind of see you.
Well, that's what I want it to do. Whether it's accomplishing it, we'll see in time.
Yeah. I think as the outsider, the person who just kind of gets to look on it, you do a really good job of kind of diagnosing culture or diagnosing what's happening. You take in all these different pieces of media and you do a really great job of kind of synthesizing what you see. And there's episodes in this channel where I kind of attempt that. I don't do the videos. I don't show the videos. It's just kind of me giving a soliloquy. But you do this great job of kind of pulling, and it's amazing how you kind of have a great job of just synthesizing a fact or a reality or something that's going on in this culture that you see on a regular basis. It's this, I don't know, talent to be able to kind of pull all these disparate pieces together. Where do you see right now? We're kind of in this weird cultural moment. Where are those cultural turning points that you are constantly keeping your eye out for or thinking about? Or do they just come to you randomly? Like through the algorithm, I guess.
Yeah. You know, my channel, there are different pieces of my channel. Part of my channel are conversations like we're having now.
Yeah.
Part of my channel is sort of community building. I do have a little bit of my church content on my channel. I do, part of my audience is Christian, and I also wanted to give some people on my channel who don't go to church just a little insight into at least some of what they might expect in a church. But a lot of my channel that you're really talking to now is sort of thinking out loud and hopefully thinking out loud together. So, for example, this week, so I've been interested lately in this podcast done by Megan Phelps Roper, who's an interesting person given what Westboro Baptist was during the Iraq and Afghan war, for example. And then she did a podcast about J.K. Rowling's. It's an interesting topic. ContraPoints weighed in again, who was on the podcast. So a lot of this for me is sort of processing out loud. I started doing this a number of years ago when I found Rod Dreher's blog. That's actually, I think, how I found Jordan Peterson first, is through Rod Dreher's blog. And what I really liked about Dreher's blog was he was looking at things and thinking out loud about it. And I found that helpful. And even before I'd found Dreher's blog, I'd been using my own blog for that. I just needed, if I'm totally silent, just thinking in my own head, it's a little too muddled. And that's why if you write, like say on a keyboard, I kind of get it out and then I can see it. Okay, now I relate to it in a different way. Speaking it, I relate to it in a different way. So I'll see something that sort of catches my attention. I want to pull it into the channel. I want to talk about it. Often my videos, and people complain about, some people complain about my videos for this reason, because they're looking for a well-tailored presentation on a topic. And that is definitely not a lot of my videos. A lot of my videos is, here's this thing that I saw.
Yeah.
Here's some thoughts that I have. But as I hear myself thinking out loud, some new thoughts come to my mind. And then, oh yeah, I remember this other thing that I watched a little while ago. So I'm going to pull that in. And so I really don't know what the video is about until I get to the end of the video. And then when I have to make a thumbnail and a title for it, then it's like, what's really the essence of what I was trying to grasp with?
Yeah.
And so then that's that kind of video. And so then after I've made that video, I throw it out to the internet, and what do people do with it? Well, they comment on it. And I read their comments, and it's like, wow, I never had that idea, or I didn't know about this thing. Or, and then of course, after you've been doing this for a few years, you know very little about the people who comment on your videos, except whatever their little YouTube handle is.
Yeah.
And, then I started doing these Randall's conversations. Then the people who are commenting, well, now I see them like you and I see each other.
Yeah.
And then I ask them questions because they've been commenting at me, or maybe they haven't. But they've been watching my stuff and thinking together with me. So now we can think together. And now suddenly I have insights that I never would have had before if I had been cut off from my audience.
Yeah.
And now we can think together. And I think the church is intended to be a thinking, believing, praying, living community. But I also, if the church is going to be able to connect with people beyond itself, it's going to need to be able to do that with people outside. And it's going to have those skills to do that. So again, for me, this whole thing has tended to be pastoral development, and along the way I discover, wow, I'm doing ministry while I'm growing myself. And yeah, that somebody's at my door. This never happens.
I'm the lucky one to get it.
So pause just a second. I'll be right back. I'm gonna give you more time.
Every single episode of the Orthopraxy Podcast is brought to you by Finish Line Ministries International. This ministry is committed to training pastors, equipping the church, providing for orphans, and reaching the lost in Malawi, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe. By working alongside the men and women of Southeast Africa, we have specifically designed ministry initiatives that will impact lives, preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, and build his kingdom along the way. So if you want to support this ministry, if you want to support Orthopraxy as a show, please visit our website, www.finishlineministries.org. Through that website, you can learn all the initiatives that we have created to support the work here and further God's kingdom in Malawi, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe. Once again, visit www.finishlineministries.org to support the work of God's kingdom in Southeast Africa. Thank you so much, and God bless.
And if I'm just doing a video, I can pause the video, go do this.
Yeah. But that's the you know, being the inner city pastor, I did that for 2.5 years, and you're everything. You're the maintenance man, you're the preacher, you're the CEO, you're the shopkeeper, it's everything. So
I gotta get keys made now. So I gotta they're do not duplicate keys. So I gotta type out an email and send it to this particular key maker, and then I gotta go down with my key and say, give me 10 of these. So I gotta do that. Today or tomorrow.
Okay. So you were just kind of talking about this whole new station of your life has put you in kind of touch. And the thing that comes to my mind is like, I don't know. I say this in a really great way, is like, you're an oddball in the pastoral role. Like imagine the pastors who are well known today, especially in our celebrity pastor world. They're never going to allow off the cuff conversation with a group of people, right? Because their duty is to kind of be a representative and kind of protect the ministry. And they're certainly not going to be, I don't mean this to be too negative, but I think the average evangelical church pastor is not equipped theologically or philosophically to think through certain things or to kind of even be willing to wrestle and tussle with some of these things. Not that you have to be, you know, an absolute, you know, monster in your mind, like super giant genius man. But all that said, I don't think they would put themselves in that position. And I think when they do put themselves in the position of like, I've got a following, it's very much like, you know, there's going to be some means that come with that, that are the benefit of it, I suppose. So I just think that's, you've put yourself in a really interesting situation that not many pastors have done that.
I didn't have a lot to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, my church is, it's an aging church. It's a dying church. You know, if I had a church of hundreds or thousands of people, I could not do this.
Mm.
And I would have to be more careful about a bunch of things because, and rightfully so, for in responsibility. I think there are many, not all, but there are many local clergy, because I have many friends who can do what I do in terms of they're well read, they're philosophically trained, sufficient to at least engage in a conversation. They are lifelong learners, so they continue to read. You know, people will sometimes say, well, pastor, not all pastors are like you. I said, well, not all are like me, but I know many pastors who are like me. And many of them are in some ways more successful than I am in their local congregation because they don't have time to spend all of this time on YouTube. And I'm just very fortunate that my congregation supports this. Yeah. And now it's been a blessing for my church too. We have to resurface our parking lot because it's starting to look like a lawn instead of a parking lot. And you know, I recommend when people find me, if they want to support my channel, there's a link to the online giving thing for my church. Give, you know, if you want to support me, support my church because my church is supporting me.
Yeah.
And so this has become a way for this church to keep the doors open. We probably would have closed by now if it hadn't been for the online giving. Mm. And now with with this parking lot project, a lot of, you know, we've gotten somewhere like $20,000 given from people online, to the church and that's for a church our size, that's a huge, huge thing.
Yeah. Two more points before I get out of here with you. I don't want to take too much of your time. You had this J.K. Rowling. You've had a few episodes about this J.K. Rowling podcast. I had a guest a couple weeks ago share about it, and I was immediately enthralled. And then, like, the next week, you were talking about it. I was like, oh, this is great. Then you have the Contra points comes back and kind of recants and goes, "That's, I didn't mean it.
I shouldn't have done it,
right?" And here's a few thoughts that, like, I just kind of took away from me that I wanted to kind of hear your thoughts on. Like, first off, there's this idea that if you do, switch from a white nationalist to a progressive liberal, that you as an individual still have this secret hate in your heart. Is kind of the ideology that, like, you're still liable to change your mind, or you still got secret things in your, and it's just, what's fascinating is it's a very Protestant Reformation argument. This is Tom Holland, right? Like, this is, you are not a part of the elect. It just made me feel like she is a Calvinist.
And she is a Calvinist.
She is a Calvinist to her core. You are not elect. I am not elect. And you can't become elect by your own will. It is a foreordained. You are either, you know, a liberal ideologue, or you are not. You are either a progressive from the foundations of the world, or you are not. And it's just like, when you hear that, you're like, oh man. And then there's no process in this, you know, vein of their Protestant, you know, denomination, the LGBT denomination. There's no sanctification. I just find that interesting, that there's no ability to recover. There's no sinner's road of, like, I'm going to recover and become a person that has, I went from this undignified image to this dignified image. For us, it's like, you know, non reconciled to Christ, but then I am become the image of Christ, like my bigger brother, my elder brother in Christ. And so I just find it so interesting that, like, it's such a fascinating dichotomy of, like, complete Calvinism and no sanctification. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on, like, whether you caught that as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I noticed that right away with wokeism. I thought, oh, this is just Calvinism. This is just Calvinism, except you don't have a path to redemption. You don't have people who say, thanks be to God, you know, who can save me? You know, the end of Romans 7, who can save me?
Yeah.
And Calvinists basically can say, thanks be to God. So they got the worst half of Calvinism and not the best half.
That's it.
And I see that. Yeah. So with J.K. Rowling's and this, or just watching ContraPoints in this, well, yeah, Megan Phelps, Roper. First, I thought, you know, because she left Westboro Baptist, then she seems like sort of a nice liberal young woman. But, well, now I got betrayed by her. So I guess once a bigot, always a bigot. There's absolutely no way out of her bigotry, no matter how much, you know, supplication or reformation or right thinking she does. There's no way out of her, no way out of her perdition of her bigotry. And it's like, you know, and part of what, I mean, Calvinists, seldom do we fully inhabit our doctrinal systems. Our doctrinal systems point to things, but so I among, let's say, Dutch Calvinists in the mid 20th century, there were some extreme groups, and these groups manifest different things. For example, there was one church where the elders would be by the door, and the elders imagined that just by looking at someone, they could decide who was elect and who was reprobate. It just,
that's nice. You know,
oh, wow.
That's great. You
know, I mean, that's better than gaydar, I suppose, because you don't have to pay any attention to the reprobate. And then when you listen to ContraPoints go on about these bigots, it's like, she's just like these Calvinists that I've seen, that have been part of my history and my tradition. And except she doesn't have the wherewithal or the theological tradition to understand exactly what she's doing. So so then again, to go back to what I was talking about in terms of love, you know, Paul says, while we were yet sinners, you know, while we were yet sinners, how does that square then with Ephesians and these from the foundations of the earth passages? Yeah, I don't know. I'll let Paul answer that. While we were yet sinners, you know, Christ died for us. And so it is in fact this capacity to love your neighbor all the way up to and including your enemy.
Yes, yes.
That is the redeeming power of Christ. And and to the degree that the church can embody this, and again, part of the church kind of goes off and becomes, well, love means always saying yes. It's like, no. I'm a parent. I understand that. You learn the word no. You teach your children the word no, because no is a really helpful word.
Yeah.
And no doesn't mean always saying yes, and love doesn't mean always saying no. Love means learning when to say yes and learning when to say no.
Yeah.
And so to the degree that, and so, you know, so ContraPoints is there basically saying all these people are beyond redemption, so the best we can do is block them on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's your answer, I've got far better answers than you. So please come to my estuary, sit down, and let's talk about it. Will I be able to convince you? I don't know, but hopefully what I'll be able to do is show you what love looks like.
Yeah.
Because that is evangelism.
Yeah. That the thing that I was thinking about after I watched that, I watched your video and then I watched her video, and there was no place for love thy neighbor. No, pray for those who persecute you. And what makes Christianity so radical is that the Christian looks at the Roman world and goes, I love you even when you crucify my whole family and when you burn down our church. Like, that's, you know, so there's There's no hope. So, okay, let me wrap it up.
And so Megan Phelps Roper, even in the, even in that sick little church and community, which was actually an extended family in which she was raised in, she got that from them.
Yeah.
And when, even when she took out, even when she left all of the crappy stuff they were doing, she kept that. Yeah. And ContraPoint zooms in on that and says, no.
Right.
We won't love you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, please tell me what you have left for them then.
Yeah.
Beyond the genocide of human history.
Yeah. It's that's their heresy, right? The heresy for them in their theology is there's no loving those who don't agree with us.
Love cannot be afforded.
Yeah. All right. So let me end on this. This is something I've been kind of curious about asking other guests in the past. This is very much a Tom Holland inspired question. Christianity topples the Roman Empire. It takes 400 years, but it topples the Roman Empire, and Christ, who was once on the bottom, is now on the top. At least
it colonizes the Roman Empire.
Yeah, right. And so, and it does that through little bits. It's the leaven that leavens the whole.
I got your question. I'm terribly sorry about this. Sorry. Anyway, you were revving up for a question.
Revving up for a question. So essentially, the Christianity overthrows the Roman Empire, right? And it does it through piety, and it does it through, you know, love, and it does it through, doesn't do it through the sword. When we're in 2023, the evangelical world is very dispensational in its ideology or theology. It's hell in a handbasket. This will never over, this world is terrible, will never overcome again. Will Christianity ever kind of, you know, pull another Roman Empire conquest, i.e. the Western world, whether that be Western Europe, America, yada, yada?
I think it continues to do it. It did it to the Vikings. I mean, for a while, there were all this whole group of Viking shows on streaming TV, you know?
Yeah.
And what was amazing is these Vikings come down and they're, you know, they're Viking, they're raping, they're pillaging, they're stealing. And you have all these Christians and they go into these churches and here's their God splayed naked on a cross. And the Vikings are looking like, how's Jesus supposed to beat Thor?
Yeah.
But you know what? He did.
Yeah.
All those places that worship Thor, they begin worshiping Christ.
Yeah.
And so, even though Christians have behaved badly throughout the years, and even though Christians have taken up the sword to try to promote the work of Christ, that's happened again and again and again, Jesus keeps beating Thor.
Yeah.
And Jesus keeps beating Jupiter.
Right.
And it just keeps happening. And so, no, it's always kind of a mystery when it does happen, because you're like, that shouldn't happen. Thor should just kill Jesus and that's the end of it. But again, this God keeps coming out of the tomb. And the problem is, what do you do with a God you can't kill? But he doesn't come out of the tomb just to kill and destroy his enemies. He comes out of the tomb and redeems his enemies, and he conquers through love. And so it's, you know, Christians are always sort of in this space of thinking, well, how can we really, you know, how can this work? And it's a very fair question, but the historical fact is it does keep working.
Yeah.
And the other historical fact, though, is that it keeps working through Christians getting eaten by lions.
Yeah.
And Christians going up on crosses. And it's like, no. I'd much rather win in the way that Thor wins.
Yeah.
We get that. But remember who really does win.
Yeah. So for sure. I want to win, and I don't want to have to deal with any of the whole pain and suffering part. Can we figure that out? Is there a way we can figure that out?
Yeah. If you could be a little bit more like Zeus, we'd appreciate it. Oh, really? Would you? Is that really what you want?
Yeah. I mean, it's Simon Peter cutting off the guy's ear and being like, I'm ready to fight. Let's go. Let's show the blood and Christ is just like, put it down, we'll heal the ear, and I have to go about my business. And you're just like, that's not what I wanted at all. I want a crusade. That's as much as that sounds, I mean, barbaric, and it is. I mean, it's barbarism at its highest, is going and using the sword rather than the preached word and rather than suffering. As even as a Christian, I incline to that just as much as the other, you know, disciples did. And it's not fun. It's not fun, no, to say the least.
It is not. It is not.
Well, good. Well, Paul, this has been great. Thank you. No worries.
I'm sorry for all the interruptions.
No, it was well worth it. I appreciate the time. If people wanted to learn more about you, learn more about these estuaries, how to maybe host one, where should we go?
So estuaryhub.com is a website where people could go. And there's, so my friend John Van Donk in Southern California, he runs a thing called ELSNET, Estuary Leader Host Support Network, something like that.
Yeah.
And basically what he does online is just shows people how this, what I call this estuary protocol, how to run a meeting where you don't have to have a Bible study planned. It won't necessarily be about a Christian topic, but the group itself, the 6 or 8 people around that circle, can figure out how to have a satisfying, meaningful, productive conversation together.
Yeah.
And in that group too, people sharing best practices. You know, when people find out how simple it is, they're like, well, that's just kind of a little group organizing trick. Yeah, that's all it is. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But my hope is that churches will pick this up, and people say, well, anybody can do this. Yeah, anybody can do this. It's just, there's no big secret. It's not copyrighted, nothing like that. It's just a dumb little trick. But my hope is that churches will become places where not only will people maybe go to get some money for rent or from electricity or for gas or for food or something like that, because I want the church to continue to do that, but also to be able to bring themselves and say, these are the things I'm thinking about. Can we talk about this? Yeah, we can talk about this.
Yeah.
And then if the people of God, if the church is in the room, if there are pastors in the room, then maybe that'll give the people a little window into, well, these Christians aren't sort of taking money out of the community. They're adding value to the community, and they're,
yeah,
you know, I don't know if I want to join them, but I'm sure glad they're there.
Mm.
And that's not a bad thing for the church.
That's great. Yeah. And then I'll leave people a couple of videos that I've watched lately, maybe the ContraPoints one in the description, okay, and people can kind of follow you from there. So, but this has been great. Paul, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Seamus. It's been fun.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks again to my guest, Paul, for sitting down with me on the podcast today. As I walked away from the conversation, I kind of had two big ideas that were spinning around in my head as I left. First is this idea that Christians should be willing to be going out into the world and to have conversation, to engage the world with the words of Christ, and to meet them with the claims that Christ has against whatever, you know, ideologies or worldviews that they're coming with. Like, we should be willing and unafraid to bring forth what treasures that Christ has given us and engage in those conversations. And then second, Paul ended the podcast so well with the idea that in reality, Thor should beat Jesus. Statistically, like if we're laying out Mortal Kombat style, the fighting abilities of Thor and Jesus, just, you know, looking at the paperwork, it would seem that Thor would win every time. But in fact, Christ beats Thor. And what do you do with a God who keeps coming back to life? Like, that was just such a great line. So two ideas. Paul mentioned this passage when we were having the conversation, but I wanted to highlight it because I think it spoke well to what he was speaking of. This is Paul the Apostle in Acts chapter 17. He's in Athens. He's going to where the philosophers are meeting. And the book of Acts says this, 17, starting at verse 16. It says, "Now, while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him as he saw the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the devout persons, and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be there. Some of the Epicureans and the Stoic philosophers also conversed with him. And some said, "What does this babbler wish to say?" Others said, "He seems to be a preacher of foreign divinities, because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection." And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, "May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? For you bring some strange things to our ears. We wish to know, therefore, what these things mean." Now, all the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there would spend their time in nothing except telling or hearing something new. And as you read the rest of that passage, it's this famous kind of monologue of Christ, and he quotes some of the Greek philosophers, and he points them to this idol of the God who they don't know exists yet. And he says, Yes, in fact, the God that you've always been looking for, the idol who has no name, the God who has no name, the one that you're searching for, it is, in fact, the Creator God who created all things and looks for you and longs for you to look after, to search for Him. And so this is, you know, this incredibly convicting scripture for us as Christians who are seeing that Paul sees the Athenians. He sees this epicenter of culture, of religious thought, of philosophical thought, of theaters and poems and writings. You know, Athens is like the pinnacle of Greek thought, and Paul doesn't see all this with a disinterest. He doesn't see all this with just kind of a lackadaisical mindset of like, let them kind of go and do their thing, kind of let them be with their Greekness. But it says that he was provoked with him. His spirit was provoked within him. He was convicted. He was pricked. His heart was challenged when he saw that the city was full of idols. And he didn't want to just sit there and let them be where they were. But in fact, he goes to the Jews and he challenges them in the synagogue. So he's going after one religion/philosophy. He then sees the idols, the Greek gods. So he's challenging a second philosophy and ideology. Then he sits down and he talks with the Epicureans and the Stoics, who weren't always necessarily faith-based, but would have kind of rejected the Greek gods. And so you have the third. And so he is willing, he's going on a full frontal attack. Paul is willing to say, whatever ideology is going to come my way, I will engage it with the gospel. And at one point, the people around him are going, what in the world is this he even talking about? Is he preaching a new God? Because he's preaching Jesus and the resurrection. And so Paul is willing to go into the marketplace, into the busiest places, and to preach the gospel and to engage with conversation. And so, speaking of Paul Vanderclay, I'm encouraged and challenged by what he's doing, by kind of meeting the interlocutor on YouTube and having conversations and doing that in real life and kind of bringing people along the way to kind of do that same thing and replicate it. I think this is what we do miss as Christians. We oftentimes lock ourselves up in our sanctuaries, in our churches, and we're really good at criticizing what's outside. We're really good at kind of throwing the stones and kind of making people feel bad from far away, but seldom are we willing to kind of sit down, have conversation, hear people out. And I'm not saying that means we should compromise. I'm not saying that means we should deny what we have in our confessionals or in our catechisms, but it should be something that we're willing to listen and proclaim. Sometimes we're not able to proclaim because we're not even willing to listen. And so I think it's a really a spiritual practice that we as Christians are missing out on when we lack conversation, when we lack moments of coming and meeting people with their ideas. Paul talks about, Paul Vanderclay talks about these estuary meetings of people who are just thinking and in this world where we're constantly inundated with new information and new news cycles and moments of pop culture, celebrities doing outlandish things, politicians doing outlandish things, war in the world, new ideologies popping up in the world, protests on a regular basis. And we're sitting here thinking, what am I supposed to think about these things? And Vander Clay, I'm just going to call him that from now on, talks about how he wanted to start his YouTube channel just because he felt like he just needed a place to kind of articulate and kind of get out some of the thoughts that he has. And honestly, that's a lot of times why I enjoy this podcast, because it just allows me to kind of synthesize a lot of things that I've heard and reading about and kind of share with you all. And if nobody's really listening, that's cool. At least I can kind of get some things off my chest. But all that to say, my challenge to you all would be, you're hearing this and you're feeling I'm kind of intimidated by conversation. Should we really be opening ourselves up? Should we be allowing people outside to come in? Look at what the Apostle Paul's doing. He was willing to go and meet people in their locations and to engage them with their ideologies. And ultimately, his main end was to preach Jesus Christ and him resurrected. Hope you had a good time listening to this conversation. I know I did as well. Thank you so much for listening every time. Appreciate you guys. God bless.